As Sans is a much better, or should that be, much worse, composer than he's cracked up to be, and experiencing an eviscerated piano on the south coast of England. Sarah Nichols, Inside Out Piano.
Music Matters was presented by Tom Service and produced by Brian Jackson. And you can download the programme as a podcast and sign up for the Music Matters newsletter at bbc.co.uk/radio3. Well, a very good afternoon to you from me, Ian Skelly, here to guide you through our programmes here on Radio 3 this afternoon, which continue in just a moment with highlights of a concert given at this year's Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music by the American organist Kimberly Marshall. Then at 2, our recital of piano music by Takemitsu and Debussy by the pianist Noriko Ogawa. First, though, with the time at 1 o'clock, a summary of the BBC News this lunchtime from David Cornett.
Three cabinet ministers have called for the legal time limit for abortion to be reduced. The Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, told the Times newspaper that he supported a halving of the limit from 24 weeks to 12. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, joined the Culture Secretary, Maria Miller, in advocating a 20-week cut-off. Mr. Hunt has been criticised by women's rights campaigners and the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, whose spokeswoman called his comments disappointing. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, has called for a change in the law to allow faster deportation of terrorism suspects. The radical Muslim cleric Abu Hamza and four other men are due to appear in court in the United States later today. They were flown out of Britain last night after battling extradition for between 8 and 14 years. Pope Benedict's former butler has been convicted of stealing confidential papers and has been sentenced to 18 months in prison. During his trial, Paolo Cabriele insisted that he'd wanted to expose evil and corruption at the heart of the Roman Catholic Church. The Turkish army has fired into Syrian territory for the fourth consecutive day after a mortar round from Syria landed in southern Turkey this morning. Reports say the shell exploded in a village close to the border with Syria. There are no reports of casualties. Detectives in Mid Wales have until 5 o'clock to charge or release a man they're questioning over the murder of 5-year-old April Jones. Mark Bridger, who's 46, was arrested on Tuesday, the day after April disappeared from near her home in McCuntleth. A 38-year-old man being treated in London for a rare virus has died in hospital. The man was diagnosed with Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever after he returned to Glasgow from Afghanistan on Tuesday. It's the first confirmed case of the disease in Britain. The hospital says the risk to the public is extremely low. And the weather, it'll be a mainly fine afternoon across the UK with some good sunny spells. Parts of the north may see a few showers, though, while the far south of England may stay rather cloudy. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
David, thank you very much. Later this afternoon, the jazz pianist Willem Simcock explores his musical influences, both jazz and classical, when he hosts this week's edition of Saturday Classics. Ravel, Stravinsky, Mark Antony Turnage, they all rub shoulders with Keith Jarrett, Chick Corea and John Taylor. Saturday Classics at 3 this afternoon here on Radio 3. But next, today's early music show, and Catherine Bott turns her attention this afternoon to the organ. And you might like to know that the full details of the music featured in today's programme are available on the early music show pages of the Radio 3 website.
Hello. In today's early music show, a conversation with organist Kimberly Marshall, who made a flying visit to London from her home in the United States to take part in the 2012 Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music. Dr. Kimberly Marshall was the winner of the St. Albans International Organ Playing Competition in 1985, and since then she's built up a formidable international reputation as a recitalist and teacher. She currently holds the Patricia and Leonard Goldman Endowed Professorship in Organ at Arizona State University. Throughout the programme, we'll be playing highlights from her Lufthansa recital on the St. John's Smith Square Kleiss organ, which featured music by Bach and Marchand, recreating something of the spirit of the great keyboard duel between them.
Thank you.
Bach Fantasy in G major. Kimberly Marshall, how old were you when you first got the organ bug?
It's very interesting because I didn't really get the organ bug. I was very devoted to the piano, and my piano teacher was a very fine organist and suggested that I take organ lessons. And so in order not to insult him, I decided I would take some lessons, but not really practice, and that he would lose interest in me as an organist, and then I would be free. And of course, the opposite happened. I became intrigued by the instrument. So I would have to say that at about age 15 and a half, after 6 months of lessons on the organ, I got the bug. I studied at Salem College in my hometown, where there were two Flintrop organs. And this would have been in the late 70s, when these Dutch instruments that had been imported to the United States had quite an impact on recovering early music and early playing techniques. And from the very start, I was fascinated in that and even had, at that time, an ideal instrument on which to practice and to experiment.
Is it possible just to play the organ without getting another bug, which is to find out about the history of organs and their repertoire?
Oh, very much so. It depends really on the person. Many people love the organ and throw themselves into the colors and the textures possible and create new music through improvisation. I just became very interested, especially I studied at Oxford as a postgraduate, and part of my program there was to look at the early history of my instrument. And that encouraged me to delve deeper. And I find that from my research, I often get ideas for my performances. But I wouldn't say that it's necessary to do that, because every artist finds inspiration in different places. So for me, the history and finding some arcane documents sometimes, it can be very inspirational and help me to craft new programs.
Well, I see that your doctoral thesis, which you undertook at Oxford, was published in 1989, and it's called The Iconographical Evidence for the Late Medieval Organ. So your interest in the instrument goes right back.
Back to the beginning. Actually, the beginning was in the 3rd century BC. Many people don't realize that, but there was actually a Greek engineer who created an instrument where a set of pipes was played by a keyboard mechanism. And that really is the first organ. But I'm very interested, of course, in the medieval, so from the mainly 14th century, from which we have our earliest repertoire.
Tell me about the organ at St. John's Smith Square.
It's a modern instrument. I think it was built about 17 years ago, something like that. And I was actually living in London at the time it was installed. So I had the chance to go and hear it a bit as they were voicing it. It's fairly eclectic instrument in that you can play many types of music. The reeds aren't particularly French and they're not particularly German, so you can sort of make them work for everything. I think it's a nice instrument for the program I'm playing.
You've given the recital the title, Bach versus the World, so just give me a soundbite. If we were on another kind of radio show, what is it about Bach in an organist's life that makes him so important?
Bach is the composer for the organ. He took the possibilities of the instrument and combined it with his amazing contrapuntal skills, really, to create repertoire that we've really never seen anything like that before or since, I think. It's really the non plus ultra of the organ. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to play Bach's music in conjunction with music by the leading French composer of the time, Louis Marchand. And the title Bach versus the World really means that Bach would win, I think, against any other organist of his time, or perhaps even of any time. But the idea of being able to do a bit of research and put together a competition that actually could have taken place using surviving repertoire was quite intriguing for me.
The particular competition we're talking about here is one that actually didn't happen in the end, but my goodness, if it had. It's a sort of huge international playoff in Dresden in 1717.
Thank you.
mean, nowadays, an organ competition or many instrumental competitions involve a test piece. But this was not so much about who can play piece A better. It was largely about skill in improvisation, wasn't it?
Definitely. At that time, I think that both men would have just improvised, trying to show off their greatest technical skills, their understanding of the instrument, their ability to use the different registers of the instrument adroitly. Marchand had been playing in the courts of modern-day Germany for about 4 years. He was making the rounds, very highly appreciated. And he was in Dresden, and one of the court musicians got the idea of staging a competition and invited Bach to come up to Dresden to basically compete as an organist against Marchand. And Bach did come to Dresden and showed up at the appointed place at the appointed time, and there was no Marchand. And they went to check, and it happened that he had taken a very early morning coach and returned to France.
Thank you.
Did Bach and Marchand actually even meet?
They did not, which is a pity. I would be very interested to know how those two personalities might interact, because Marchand was quite a character. We believe he had to leave France because he got in trouble with the king. He was one of the organists of the royal chapel, and he had a lot of problems with his wife. He apparently was not a good husband and pretty much abandoned his wife to pursue his own interests, and she was rather destitute and made petition to the king that she should be supported. And the anecdote says that Marchand played half of the mass and then left the chapel, saying, "If the king wants me to pay half of my income to my wife, she can play half of the mass." And I don't think Louis XIV took very kindly to that, and as a result, Marchand is next found in Germany.
But he was a formidable player.
Definitely, and we're fortunate that he notated a great deal of his music, and that the notated music reflects what must have been the virtuosity. With Marchand, we find some exceptional works for the period in which he was living. For example, a plein jeu that has a double pedal part, which is unheard of in the French repertoire, because the pedal was usually not exploited fully by French Baroque composers. They were much more concerned with the different colors of the manuals, and the pedal lines tend to be rather simple. And with this piece, we really see quite an unusual exploitation of the pedal.
Kimberly Marshall, in your recital, you're to begin and end with Bach and then Marchand, but in between them, you're going much early to Arnold Schlick, who was born in around 1460, so we are really talking early organ repertoire. How does he get into the programme?
I couldn't resist the opportunity to pay homage to Schlick, because this year we're celebrating the 500th anniversary of the first published organ music, which was Schlick's tablature. And so I'm playing one excerpt from that, which is the lovely Maria Zart. It's a contrapuntal setting of a devotional song from the 15th century. And I also am including his massive work in 10 parts on the plain song Ascendo ad Patrem Meum. And there's an interesting story with this piece because it survives in manuscript that Schlick sent to Bernhard Claes, who was a bishop in Trent. So the manuscript is actually in a library in Italy. And with the manuscript, Schlick included a letter saying that he was sending this music to honor the new Holy Roman Emperor, which was Charles V at that time. And Claes had been in Heidelberg, where Schlick was organist, soliciting support from the electors for Charles V. And they met then, and then it seems that Schlick wanted to continue that correspondence a little bit. And he must have been trying to show his prowess at the organ with this, because he was blind. So he would have had to have someone else notate the music. He clearly wanted to go on record as being this incredible organist. And the piece is in 10 parts, of which 4 must be played by the pedals. So the Germans were already in the late 15th, early 16th century exploiting the pedals very fully. Schlick even writes in one of his treatises that an organist should be able to play 2 and even 3 parts in the pedal in order to make arrangements of polyphonic works. And with this piece, he takes it even farther. So you have to use heels and toes of both feet simultaneously, which contradicts those early music specialists that say no heels were used before the 19th century. I know of no other way to play 4 parts in the pedal without using my heels.
Thank you.
I'm getting the impression of a tremendously virtuosic workout for you, with feet and hands and keyboards and heels and toes on pedals. I'm very, very impressed. And finally, you're going to allow Bach to win because you're ending with his mighty Passacaglia in C minor.
I couldn't resist the opportunity to play the Passacaglia. It's a great way to show off an organ as well. And I'll be using some different timbres for different sections of the piece. A Passacaglia is a set of variations over a repeated bass line. But Bach takes that form and really pushes it to the absolute limit, just like an athlete breaking a world record. And there are a number of variations. It's really a compendium of what is possible to do when varying a theme. Interestingly, the theme was taken from a French source, we believe, from the composer André Raison. He wrote a mass in the second mode, and Bach, we know, studied Raison's music and might have found this little theme in a Christe from that mass. And it's very, very interesting that the Passacaglia started with Raison's little theme, and to see what Bach did with it, just what he might have done with the theme of a competition had it taken place. And I do think, given the genius of his Passacaglia, which ends with a robust fugue in invertible counterpoint with two counter subjects, that it would have been almost impossible to compete with him at that level.
By now, with your international reputation, it's tremendous. You came to prominence by winning a competition yourself back in the 80s. And I would imagine that nowadays you're often asked to judge competitions. What are you looking for when you choose who should be the winner of a 2012 competition?
Musicality. The organ is a vast machine. It really is a machine, and it's amazing what we can do with that machine, but we can't have the subtleties of tone and articulation that a singer or a violinist can have. And I think we're always yearning for that, and we need to have that in our ears. Often, organists can be rather mechanical in their playing, not overcoming the limitations of the instrument, rather enjoying all the colors and possibilities, but not really thinking musically enough about phrasing and shaping. And even though it's not possible to take an individual note and shape it in the same way as a singer or an instrumentalist, we can often give the illusion through our timing and sometimes through our touch as well. So I am always listening for the organist who can transcend the mechanical nature of the instrument, all the bells and whistles, because all of the competitors do that perfectly. But what really distinguishes an organist in my mind is the ability to create a very musical result that is on a par with the finest singing or the finest cello playing. And that person will always have my highest vote.
Kimberly Marshall, thank you very much for talking to me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
The great Passacaglia in C minor by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed at this year's Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music by Kimberly Marshall. She was Catherine Bott's guest in today's Early Music Show, and you can find full details of the music that she performed there on the Early Music Show pages of the Radio 3 website. Well, in tomorrow's Early Music Show, as part of the piano season on the BBC, Lucy Skeeping looks back on the life and the music of Jan Ladislav Dusek. That's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news. Well, now, just before our lunchtime concert this afternoon, which includes music by Claude Debussy, a relevant word from Donald MacLeod.
The critics didn't much know what to make of the music of Claude Debussy. One of them said it was like a kind of grey mist that you wanted to pierce to see if there was actually anything there. Well, this week I'll be trying to disperse some of that mist and give you a clearer view of Debussy and his complicated private life, and particularly from the point of view of the music he composed for his own instrument, the piano. Debussy as Composer of the Week, part of the piano season on the BBC, every day this week at 12 noon, and again at 6:30 on BBC Radio 3.
A reminder that our opera this evening on Radio 3 is the acclaimed production from this year's Salzburg Festival, a story of true love, jealousy and Freemasonry, first performed in Vienna in 1791, an instant hit and yet one of the last things its composer wrote. He was dead within the year. We transport you to ancient Egypt via the Austrian Alps this evening for a period instrument performance of Mozart's The Magic Flute. Nicholas Arnoncourt conducts the Vienna Consensus Musicus, and our opera on three begins at 6 tonight. Next this afternoon, though, a second chance to hear the lunchtime concert we broadcast live here on Radio 3 last Monday from Wigmore Hall in London. It was introduced by Sarah Walker.
Piano season on the BBC continues apace here at Wigmore Hall with a recital that offers a fascinating blend of Japanese impressionism and French technical brilliance. The pianist is Noriko Ogawa, and both areas of repertoire are home ground for her. She's renowned for her interpretations of the music of Debussy, and for the main part of her concert today she'll play his two books of etudes, late works from 1915, which draw on the musical experience of a lifetime. Before that, though, music from later in the 20th century that still has the poetic, descriptive beauty we find in Debussy. The composer is Toru Takemitsu, who died in 1996 and is still very much missed, a man who loved contemporary cinema and the ancient traditions of Japan with equal passion. He wrote a few pieces with the title Rain Tree, including a percussion ensemble piece and two sketches for piano. And the one we'll hear today is the second sketch, written in 1992 and dedicated to Olivier Messiaen. Takemitsu took inspiration from a story by Kenzaburo Oe called The Ingenious Rain Tree, where the tree was used as a metaphor for the whole universe. And certainly its hypnotic opening bars have a celestial feel, the language not so far from that of Messiaen himself, with colourful harmonies, still very gentle on the ear. And here is Noriko Ogawa now to play Rain Tree Sketch 2 by Takemitsu.
Rain Trees Sketch 2 by Takemitsu, played there by Noriko Ogawa. And Takemitsu's expression mark for that piece, Celestially Light. Beautiful performance. Well, there are strong connections between the two main parts of this concert. We're going to hear music by Debussy now, a composer whom Takemitsu revered and who also loved Japanese culture. The score for his orchestral piece, La Mer, is famously illustrated with that Japanese print, The Great Wave of Kanagawa, and he loved evoking the sounds of the Orient. Well, the 12 pieces Noriko Ogawa will play for us now are Debussy's Etudes, composed in 1915 and dedicated to Chopin, and there's little doubt that they were influenced by him. The first volume begins modestly with an exercise for the five fingers after Mr. Czerny. Then it goes on to explore thirds, fourths, sixths, octaves, and then the work of the eight fingers, no thumbs. Well, the second volume of Etudes raises the stakes with challenges involving chromatic intervals, ornaments, repeated notes, contrasting sonorities, arpeggios, and finally chords. It's as if Debussy was squeezing all his learning and love of the piano into this final masterpiece for the instrument. In fact, the Etudes have been compared to Beethoven's Diabelli variations in terms of their significance in the composer's output. So here again is Noriko Ogawa to continue her recital live from Wigmore Hall with Debussy's Etudes, books 1 and 2.